Emmy Award-winning writer Adam Resnick began his career at Late Night with David Letterman. He went on to create Fox's Get a Life, starring Chris Elliott, and has written several screenplays, including the cult favorites Cabin Boy and Death to Smoochie. Resnick has written for Saturday Night Live and was a co-executive producer and writer for HBO's The Larry Sanders Show. In other words, pretty much every program and movie that I love dearly. Resnick uses the self-descriptor euphorically antisocial. His new book is a tour of the troubled psyche, a memoir in essays, if you will. It's entitled Will Not Attend, Lively Stories of Detachment and Isolation. And we welcome Adam Resnick to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir? How are you, Adam? I was going to say, hey, Adam, how are you?
Wow, you got me. Oh, yeah, good. I heard everything you said. You couldn't hear me for some reason.
Okay, good. Oh, so you heard all the nice things I said about you.
That's that was sweet. Thanks. I really appreciate that.
that's all that really matters. I'm glad you heard all that.
You're a publicist dream. You're a publicist dream.
Well, thank you. Well, this book is, man, a lot of fun. At what point did you think, were these random things that you were just writing that you wanted to put together, or did you set out and say, I'm going to write a book?
I did, you know, I had said for many years I wanted to write a book because when you write for television and movies, a lot of times things don't come out the way you had hoped, you know, when you wrote them. And I was always intrigued by the idea of a book, of just having that complete control over something. And ultimately, I just feel like I am a writer. Sometimes then when it has to be turned into something else, that's where the erosion process begins. So once I finally buckled down and did it, I don't think I enjoyed anything more of anything I've ever done than writing this book, and it was a great experience, and also knowing that it didn't have to be turned into anything else. It was just a book. That's why I wrote it, and it was, it came very naturally to me for some reason.
I want to talk about the book itself, but let me talk about that idea of it being turned into something else, because this has been your career for most of your life. So what is that process when you work very hard on a script, when you work very hard on an idea, and then it becomes collaborative?
that's a kind word for it.
Yes. But,
well, it's a collaboration. It is collaborative, and sometimes that's good. You know, there's a lot of times writers will write something that, let's say, if it becomes a movie, it's even better than the writer could have imagined. If their collaborator is someone like, you know, Martin Scorsese or something, it's like, that's great. But then there's other times that, you know, the people you work with, the director, or whatever, they have a different vision for it. But that's the trade-off. If you wrote a script like a screenplay and you went out there and tried to sell it and you did sell it, you made that deal then. You have to understand that you gave it away. You didn't give it away. You sold it literally for money, and you know you're not going to have a lot of power to keep it the way you would have liked to have seen it. So especially if you're not directing it. So that's the trade-off, and that's the thing, and that's why I had a problem with that a lot, because yeah, there are some things that I've written that the final product is not the way that I would have pictured it, and I think the book was a reaction to that, and that's why, you know, I want to write another book too. It was just creatively, you know, the best experience I've ever had.
When you, in writing these, were these written in any order or any theme, or were they very random for you?
No, I mean, it's weird. I didn't ever think them. They just sort of came to me naturally, and the stories that ended up being in the book seemed to be the right stories for the book. There were some, you know, I had some other ones I was thinking about and some half-written ones, but they didn't fit, you know. When I'd put the names of the chapters up on like a board and just take a look and think about the stories, and because the book's not linear yet, it does. I think it should be read from beginning to end. It jumps around at different points in my life, but it felt right. It clicked together for me. I thought even one extra story, or even to lose one story, would have thrown the book off. And again, that wasn't overthinking it at all. I think it's probably that when things come out best, it's when they just sort of happen like that, you know. It just feels right. That's the best way I can describe the process of writing the book, this book.
How old were you when your father said to you, you know what happens to people who laugh too much, don't you? They end up crying.
Yeah, well, that I heard that many times, my brothers and I, growing up. It's like my dad was a guy who demanded silence, you know, when he came up from work, you know, we would just scatter like roaches because he didn't want to, you know, he'd want him to be in a bad mood, and, you know, when he ate dinner, had to be perfectly quiet. But sometimes that the pressure that might, you know, would cause myself or maybe a brother or two to start to, like, you know, laugh a little bit, and then you couldn't stop, and then he would just sort of look up from the newspaper and say, you know what happened to kids who laugh too much, they end up crying. He'd say that, but he'd say it kind of a deadpan. I mean, that was the thing that was funny about my dad. He would say all those things that sounds more sinister than what it was, even though he was kind of a scary guy. But it was, you just knew. Like, when he came home, you could hear a pin drop. It was six crazy boys, you know, just this hurricane. And then as soon as the door opened, he was there. It was dead quiet.
You say that it taught me to equate laughter with violence.
That's right. Although he was not a violent man, he would never hit us or anything, but he didn't have to. Just one look and you would be like, you would like faint just about, and this would give you one of those looks.
So when you start your work in writing and writing comedy, was that always the career goal? Was that what you wanted to get into?
No, I had no goal other than to get out of school. That's all I thought about from kindergarten through my last day of my senior year. Was like, you know, I just got to make it through this. And then then after that, it was just like, no, I just want to take a couple of years off. I can't go back to that experience because school did just feel like prison to me from day one. And so I didn't think really, I lived in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I didn't know anyone who did anything that I thought I could do. And certainly, you know, so I kind of thought I'd probably just end up selling insurance like my father and a couple of my brothers. And and did try that for a while. There's a chapter in the book about that. And I tried that for a few months. It didn't work out well. And but I was always very interested in movies and read a lot. And I ended up going to NYU Film School, which was, again, film school's a dicey thing. That's certainly, at least when I went there, I could tell right away, all right, this is not gonna help me. But what it did do, I learned about these things called internships, and that's when I was very, very, you know, influenced, and was like a lot of people, a huge fan of Late Night with David Letterman in the 80s, and I cold called there and just said, do you guys have any internships? And they're like, well, as a matter of fact, we need a writer's intern. We just lost our intern, so could you come up for an interview with the head writer? So I met with Steve O'Donnell, who was the head writer at the time, came back a couple of other times, and that's how I got my foot in the door. So I was an intern, and eventually it led to me being a writer. So it was, again, one of those things that there was some luck involved, and just fell together like that. But getting back to what you originally said, I never thought about being a writer, about being, I wasn't overly into comedy. It was, if I saw something that was funny, I liked it. But there's Harrisburg in those days too, a very sort of rural / suburban community. Mm. I didn't know anyone who had any even remote connection to anything like, you know, TV or movie business or anything like that. So I never thought it was possible. Never would have occurred to me. And I'm a defeatist and just think that everything's impossible anyway. So I didn't really have there wasn't a lot of wind beneath my wings. So,
how many years did you write for Letterman?
Five.
And what was that experience like? Because you were really in sort of the golden age of the late night NBC program.
It was the greatest job I ever had, and as I've often said, it was the happiest period of my life. I've never, and I'm just rarely happy, but I was happy then. It was a great job working for Dave. Was great. He was great. It was a great, like a little clubhouse then. You know, it was before CBS. You know, or then it became. Yeah. It was a big deal, and also show business had become a bigger deal by then. But the 80s and that great building, the 30 Rock, I just felt so lucky, you know, coming from the sticks in Pennsylvania. I just, every day when I woke up, I could not believe that I worked there, that I was working on that show in that building. So, you know, I'll never forget that.
We were, for the around the final show in May, we talked to many writers and many former writers and had them talk about some of the things that they were proud of. Did you have an assignment? Did you have, of course, you partnered with Chris Elliott on many bits,
yeah,
and met him there. So is that among your, what you would say, some of your accomplishments on that show?
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of stuff with Chris, and I did just a lot of random stuff, much of which I can't even remember anymore. I've never been one to sort of catalog anything that I've done, you know, but there's a lot of stuff that I was proud of, and just, you know, going on remotes with Dave, you know, doing those remote segments. Those were great times. I remember we went to Philadelphia one day and spent the day with Joe Frazier, you know, the boxer,
yeah,
you know, the heavyweight champ, and that was a fun day. There was a lot of things like that, and it was, I can't even remember everything. I know a lot of writers during the lead up to Dave's goodbye, where there were a lot of interviews with writers who were trying to take Dave's mouth. That's sort of not my goal, and I also can barely remember a lot of it, but it's easy to remember the Chris stuff, because that was always just Chris and I holed up in his office sort of like laughing, and but that was just a period, you know, because there was the early, like, groundbreaking period of Chris's career, which is like the guy under the seats and everything. That was, I was either not there yet or I was an intern or something, you know, and then Chris and I wrote, there was like the second half of the stuff he did, like the Marlon Brando pieces, and that's the, and that kind of stuff, that's the stuff.
And then came Get a Life on Fox, which is a show, again, I don't know what you make of the word cult following, but I don't know.
Everything that I do that it's usually a very small cult.
I mean, I own every episode of that show. Thankfully, all were released on DVD. I love that program. Was there a similar sense in doing that show on Fox and there was an NBC that you were kind of getting away with something?
I'm sorry, what was that? I lost you.
Was there the same feeling a bit on doing that show on Fox and there was an NBC and Letterman that you were doing something and getting away with it?
Now, you know, working for Letterman was just great. That was good. There was no, whether, I mean, you know, there was a feeling, I don't know if felt like we were doing something, getting away with it. It was a little bit of that, I guess, but it was joyful at least to do it. Get a Life, which was, you know, Chris and I were immediately out of our environment being in Los Angeles instead of New York. And it was, I don't know, we just get that just felt like a chore because the network hated the show. And it really didn't, you know, there was no sense that it had a following while we were doing it that became a little more apparent in the years afterwards. So it was, that was, Get a Life, my memory of that was a slog. There was nothing fun about that at all. It was just every day thought that, you know, you're going to be off the air.
And then eventually you were.
Exactly. I think it's as it should be. I think that's just the right, maybe even lived a little too long at a season and a half.
And so do you have, and of course Cabin Boy was again with Chris, and here's a film now that is, you know, they show it, they bring it out, and it gets great crowds, people still enjoy this film.
Yeah, I mean, again, the small cult following, but I'll take that because it was so maligned when it came out that my hands still shake a little bit because of Cabin Boy. It was that Chris and I were both, I think, psychically damaged by the reception that got. But there's, you know, a whole long story about Cabin Boy. It wasn't even really like Chris and I set out to do that project. It just came together in kind of an odd way, people, it didn't be, for the most part, it's like, I would say people just generally, almost everyone that saw it hated it, but it wasn't just that they hated it, it made them angry. And that part I don't really get, because, you know, if you think it's a lousy movie or whatever, that's all the time, you know, but this, rarely do you get angry about it, you know, and hate you for having anything to do with it. That was rough going for a few years.
So, and just with that story alone, would I guess you could understand why you would write a book, Lively Stories of Detachment and Isolation.
Right. A little hint there. Yeah, I know, right? It's kind of an overall feeling, a condition, the kind of the world that I live in.
Adam Resnick's new book is out in paperback. It is called Will Not Attend, Lively Stories of Detachment and Isolation. It is published by Plume. Adam, thanks for being here. Have a great rest of the summer, and wonderful having you here as always.
Thanks for having me on, Joe. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, again, you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.